Hello. Welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
Welcome, everyone, to podcast number 132 of God Beyond the Bible, the podcast made by seekers and for seekers. We are still in the book of Job, but before we dive in, Trayson, shout outs.
Yeah, and I'm going to apologize, dear listeners. I'm about to butcher two of your names. I Googled them. I did my best, but I'm from Arkansas, and some names are hard for me. So, Tonica's wife, welcome, and Schlangford, welcome, and JP, we're glad to have you here, too.
Which one did you have trouble with? JP?
It was JP. JP, I struggled all day.
And our quote for this series is, everything happens for a reason. Until it doesn't.
All right. Our topic for this month's episode is the book of Job. And again, we strongly encourage you to listen to these episodes in the order of their release and perhaps even re-listen to the previous episode or episodes before listening to each new release on this topic. As we said before, due to time constraints, we can't really recap all the pertinent information of the previous episodes to keep us up to speed.
So please keep the main plot in mind. Job's prosperity religion of believing that if he practiced diligently enough, dotted all the I's, crossed all the T's, that he would earn the kind of favor with the Lord that would protect him from the losses that other people in the world so often suffered. And now it's being challenged. Job has discovered that he is not immune to heartache and loss. And as we suggested earlier, don't allow the mysterious scene of the meeting of the hosts of heaven to distract you from the plot. We must assume that if this was an actual meeting, that Job was not aware of what was transpiring in the spirit realm. And we must identify with Job as a good guy who, out of fear, practiced his religion diligently, yet still suffered this great loss. So in spite of his religious practice, Job has lost basically everything in a very short period of time. His life as he knows it is forever changed for the worse.
And as he put it himself, the thing I feared most, the thing I dreaded, has happened. Okay, now enter the defenders of the faith. Job's three friends. We call them defenders of the faith because, like those who abuse that title today, they aren't really speaking for God. They're speaking on behalf of their dogmas and their doctrines. Something good for us to realize is that God doesn't need me to defend him, but my religious ego does demand to be defended. And like Job's friends, I will defend my religious stance regardless of how it reflects on the image or the character or the nature of God, and even when real life events and evidence contradicts that belief.
Okay, so tragedy has struck Job, and the best way to identify with what they do and say to Job is to see them as some top leaders from Job's church coming to help him through the crisis. The deacons are on the one. And the main theme of their dialogue is that if Job had really been doing things right concerning his religious practice, then he wouldn't have experienced his great loss. Their claim is that Job's suffering and loss is a result of hidden sin. Does that sound familiar?
Well, sure.
Yeah, I remember.
We want to justify when something bad happens to somebody that we always thought was good. Don't we, in the back of their minds, we think, well, they were something. They weren't genuine. Yeah. If they were genuine, that wouldn't have happened. I mean, see how we can slip right into that religion, that Job, that prosperity religion, and that makes us also judge everything by that. Okay, if something adverse happens to us, okay, then God must be upset about something. Mm-hmm. I need to figure out what I'm not doing right. I'm just throwing that in there.
Yeah, well, someone made a post on social media a couple of days ago I came across, and it was a fairly long post, but more or less the idea of it was maybe if you're sick or your business is failing or your marriage is failing, it's because God is trying to get your attention.
Well, we're going to quote later from Elihu. Mm-hmm. Which was the last guy to speak. I'm getting way ahead of ourselves. And that's exactly what he says. Yep.
So
that's exactly what he says to Job. That's his advice to Job. But go ahead.
Yeah. We're going to start with the first three friends. And they are identified as Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. If the reader of this text is not plagued by distraction of the bargaining that takes place between the Lord and Satan concerning Job's fate, their eyes are almost certain to glaze over as they read the next 30 or so chapters, as each of these characters makes three separate speeches concerning why all of this happened to Job, and Job makes a rebuttal following every single speech. This makes for 9 very long and very tedious speeches when you're about 12 years old in church.
Yeah.
It's from his three friends and the 9 rebuttals from Job.
And you have to think about it. Human nature, they sat with him for a week, right?
Before
without
they said
saying
anything.
Which was so they had all of this time, and you know in their brains that they're thinking of all of this stuff that they can say of what he must have done wrong and what must have put him in this position. It makes you wonder, were they really there to comfort him at all or just biding their time to...
You have to get your words together if you're going to give a speech this long.
Well, and remember, as you read that, keep in mind, they're just defending their religion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're defending their doctrines and dogmas of how they believe God works. That's all this is about. They're saying, we know this is how God works. And if you're saying he didn't do it this time, then you're wrong. Mm-hmm. You've made a mistake, Job. That's really what they're saying. Because they're saying, we know how he works. You don't know how he works. You're the one that doesn't know how he works. And all this time, poor old innocent Job. So they're really comforting him, aren't they? So let's sum up what each of them had to say. It was simple. Our prosperity religion dictates that, Job, you are suffering because of hidden sin. You may hide it from us, but you can't hide it from God. That's why you just lost everything. They each browbeat Job with their religion of bad things don't happen to good people and bad things only happen to bad people. This is the theme for all 9 speeches, and Job's rebuttal each time is, I know that's how it's supposed to work. According to our religion, if we do things, all the things right, God's happy with us and bad stuff don't happen. But I'm telling you, I've practiced my religion just as faithful as any of you, and I have no hidden sin, so the religion's got to be wrong.
I'm pretty sure that I just heard an audible sigh from all of our listeners when they realized we weren't going to read all the
oh, yeah, all 30 chapters of the dialogue, yeah.
Well, if we take the time to read all the dialogue.
And hopefully everybody will.
Exactly. Yes.
With this new understanding and read it, and you'll go, aha. Those are just like the people that come to see me when I lost my loved one or when something went bad in my... That sounds just like some of the people. I want to tell a story here that'll bring this out. There was a man that lost 2 of his sons in a tragic automobile accident. And he talked about one of the neighbors from the local church came down and he talked and said the neighbor come in and sat down and he talked and he told him why God was doing that. He's told him why all this happens, how God works, how all this. And he said, I thought he would never leave. And he said, one of my other neighbors came down that really wasn't affiliated with the church. And he sat down on the front porch and said, he just sat there and never said a word. So he just sat beside me on the steps on the porch. Said every once in a while he'd put his arm over on my shoulder and he'd cry a little bit with me. And if there's any talking done, he let me talk. He said, I really hated to see that friend leave.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine which ones these friends of Job's are. He even says, wish you guys would just get out of here. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you take the time to read all the dialogue, we really just see the same argument that goes on today in the organized Christian religion. It is good to note that Job's friends came under the guise of comforting him in his suffering. But the reality is, and Job even says to them, you are not comforting me at all. In fact, you're making the situation worse. Do you see any similarities between Job's friends and how those in the organized church handle similar situations in modern times? Aren't there always those people who come at the worst of times and present their religious views at the most inappropriate time, and they're always able to tell you what God's position is in the situation?
I can remember when my little sister died. I think I was 18 or 19, I think about 18 when she died. She was 10. And I can remember one woman that came to her house. And we were all there in the front sitting at the table. And this is all she did is pounded how this has all happened because God's angry and God's, because our family wasn't doing, you know, and that was her whole theme. And the whole thing is that God's doing this. God's trying to get your attention. God's telling you, showing you this because you need to change your lives. You need.
Do you remember what went through your mind when that, I mean, were you just wishing for her to get up
and leave?
It didn't
matter to me. It really didn't bother me that much. I'd been in the church, but my dad had never been in church, and I was thinking of how, and my mom wasn't really in church to speak of, and mm-hmm. I was thinking how that impacted. I kind of felt sorry for them.
Yeah. That's
because
rough.
Really what she was saying is, your daughter's dead because of you.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly the comfort that you need in a situation like yeah. that. So, I'm number 8, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The reality is that Job's friends aren't really defending God at all.
Because you can see that clear, because God says you don't know anything you're talking about, so how could they be defending God?
Yeah, right. And God doesn't need us to defend him.
Yeah.
Job's friends are defending their own religious ego.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. If Job is telling the truth, if Job is right when he says he has practiced his religion faithfully and has no hidden sin, then this makes the whole principle of his friend's religion wrong. So as you read the dialogue, each time one of them speaks, it's a little harsher, a little bit bolder, condemning Job. And by the third time each of them speaks, they're outright attacking him. And that's what religion does. If someone presents it to its subscribers with a legitimate question concerning the validity of its dogmas or doctrines that it cannot logically defend, they attack the character of the person or the persons who challenge the system.
And that is true of the Jewish religion?
Yes.
I mean, they would kill their own prophets. I mean, look what they did with Jesus. Jesus came telling them,
yep.
You've got this whole thing wrong. You guys do not understand who God even is. So what's the result? If they can't rebuttal, if they can't argue the point, let's just kill them, get them out of the way.
And I think to a degree speaking.
Let's attack them. Let's attack him. You know, they tried attacking. You know that they tried attacking the character of Jesus and tried to.
Yeah.
And because one of the religious leaders in a meeting, I'm talking about one of the Jewish leaders in the council, in the meeting, said, what can we do? The whole world's going after him.
Exactly.
So they were ready to defend and somebody suggested, let's kill him.
And I think it's hard, like speaking from my own, like I said, Christian walk, it's hard not to defend sometimes when someone starts punching holes in your parachute.
Yeah.
Because you start going, well, if I'm wrong on this, I might be wrong about everything and I can't handle being wrong on everything. So I'm just going to keep stitching the holes together.
There you go.
There's one more character that comes on the scene after each of the three friends make the last of their three arguments. As the story progresses, each of the three friends grow more aggressive in their speech, and so does Job. Now, listen, Job fires back. He, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a shouting match if you're reading that in your mind. There are some serious words being exchanged. And by the end of it, it's become very personal, even attacking the integrity and character of one another. But Job comes back each time and says, I know that's how it's supposed to work. You do good and good things happen. But I'm telling you, this time that theory is wrong. And finally, the three friends cease to speak anymore.
Then a young guy by the name of Elihu appears in chapter 32. And we are to assume that he's been there the whole time since he says he sat there silent and listened to all the speeches. And often as those who are young coming up through the ranks of religion are, he is arrogant and confident that he can make a successful argument where Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar could not. He comes out swinging. He attacks the other three for, of all things, being too soft on Job. And Elihu doubles down and rips Job and his friends to shreds, defending the doctrines and dogmas of his religion.
And it's the religion they all share. It's clear they all think the same way. They're all in the same religion.
So one of Elihu's arguments goes like this. In chapter 36, speaking of believers who suffer adversity, he says, if they're bound in chains or caught up in a web of trouble, he shows them the reason. He shows them their sins of pride. He gets their attention and commands that they turn from evil. If they listen and they obey God, they will be blessed with prosperity throughout their lives. All their years will be pleasant. But if they refuse to listen to him, they will be killed by the sword and die from lack of understanding.
Any comments?
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah.
You know, is that not the basis of our Christian religion right mm-hmm. there?
It is.
I mean, did he not just spout out? He covered all religions, especially religions of fear, that you're serving in a religion to hedge your bets to keep bad stuff from happening mm-hmm. to yeah. you. And, well, let's ask ourselves a serious question and answer it honestly. When we see tragedy strike someone, do we secretly convince ourselves that they had to do something to cause that to happen?
Don't we have to sometimes? I mean, I feel like at one point I had to believe so, because in believing that God has this sort of unstoppable destiny for my life, and that, you know, he wants only good, as we quote all of those Bible verses, know the plans I have for you and I can do all things. And mm-hmm. we want to believe that these people had to have made a wrong move. Otherwise, God's just a random jerk sometimes.
I think that's true, but I also think that we are taught in the Christian religion to be very critical anyway. And so that was always an easy, if something bad happened to somebody, it was easy for me to say, well,
it's just like it's just like the Jews. If you contacted leprosy, you were a lost sinner.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're outside of God's, you're outside of God's reach. God won't have anything to do with it. And the second part of that question is, you know, when we ask we see something happen to someone and we think, well, did they do something to deserve that? And in one of Job's friend's speeches, they told him that since God was known to be merciful, then he was probably getting off light. He probably deserved to be punished much harsher than he really was. Really?
Yeah.
But that was the argument of one of his friends. Well, Job, God, we know God's merciful, so you probably deserve to be punished much more than you are. So just take it, man.
So we talked about identifying with the characters in the story, and it feels good to identify with Job. But are we willing to identify with his three friends and the young, arrogant Elihu? That kind of, woo.
Yeah.
How many of us have been guilty of making people's suffering worse by promoting our religious dogmas and doctrines, displaying our own religious ego? This seems like a good place to stop and allow ourselves to contemplate this very personal question. So until next time, may the unconditional grace, peace, and love of the divine be on, in, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.